The fundamental thing that a heter iska does is it transforms technically your loan into a non-loan, into a business venture. But that means that by solving the problem of ribis, you have unquestionably been mevatel a mitzvah de'oraisa of lending money to somebody who needs, which should already tip you off to the fact that it's not so obvious that the Torah would want you to circumvent the problems of ribis. Ribis isn't just an isser, it's a mitzvah. Well, it's part of a bigger mitzvah, really. Right? It's part of a mitzvah. And therefore, we're forced to ask, not just the question of what is the best way, l'mehadrin, to make a heter iska. The question is, should you even be using a heter iska, or should you instead be extending a free loan to somebody, which is the mitzvah d'oraisa? I mentioned this in passing in Daf Yomi a few weeks ago, and someone came over to me afterwards and said, but all these from Jews, they make their money, they lend money with that, etc. Are they violating Yisurim? I said, I didn't say they're violating Yisurim. I said, they're not being mekayim a mitzvah d'oraisa. Chavetz Chaim is explicit. Right? The only way you can solve the problem of ribis is if you call it not a loan. If it's not a loan, then you didn't extend a loan to somebody who needed a loan. And the person said to me, well, they don't care about mitzvos. They just want money, right? And that is sort of the feeling you get, right? That's right? And the question is, it seems...
Well, that's not really accurate, because I could be a doctor, lawyer, right? Or I could lend money. Do business deals like that. So none of us are lending money to people. Unless we go ahead and do one or two loans.
Right, and that's really what the mitzvah is, right? If someone comes over to you and asks for money, and you know you can help them, you should help them. It doesn't mean you have to go into professional money lending. Now, you can say you can go into professional money lending, and on the side, you also give a few loans. Okay, so you were mevatel mitzvah d'oraisa. Okay, but that's your business. Fine, we can explain it. But I think it just this whole analysis, right? The Chafetz Chaim says at least makes it ask the question: is this right or not? Yeah. No. Interest-free, of course not. Right? Heter iska is a way of circumventing the problem, right? That's the whole point, right? But, so, what I want to do is really ask not about how to write a heter iska. I want to talk about the ethics of a heter iska. Is it right? When is it right? And this is as much of a problem as it might be in Chutz Laretz, because, okay, in Chutz Laretz, big deal. If you're not a money lender, so fine, you know, a friend comes and lends you money. How many people actually write heter iskos and charge their friends? Right? If your friend needs a few hundred dollars, you can lend it to them, you lend it. You don't do it with interest, you don't get a heter iska. Right? If you're a professional money lender, you do. But how many people are professional money lenders? How many people own banks? Whatever the case may be. Right? In Eretz Yisrael, every bank has a heter iska klali. Right? I mean, you know, when I, you know, bought a house, you sign in that mortgage, you sign a heter iska to the kablan, the bank has a heter iska, everyone has a heter iska, because you're lending money at all types of rates of interest. Everybody's Jewish, right? Everybody has to deal with this. Especially, right? Mizrahi was traditionally, Mizrahi Tvachot is traditionally the frum bank, right? So there's a heter iska klali, and the post can all deal with this. It's a problem, and there's a million questions that come up, because it's not just that. There's your electric bill. If you pay your electric bill late, so then you owe interest, and there's no heter iska. Are you even allowed to pay? Because the problem is that, right, as the Gemara notes, the Mishnah notes, you don't just violate ribis if you lend money with interest. You violate ribis if you borrow money with interest. Right? Is there daraisa? Now this is not lifnei iver. Is there daraisa? Separate iser on lova and malva. Right. So the postman has to come, bend over backwards to explain. Well, maybe when you pay the electric company, the interest is not because you want to pay interest, it's because otherwise they'll cut off your electricity, and it's just being mavriach hari, and all types of different cheshbonos. So this is a real problem in Israel. So I want to just sort of get at the heart. What? Ah, so. Well, okay,
like
so.
Electricity, I understand. You don't want them to cut off your electricity.
In Hanami. Now, obviously in Chutz Laretz, now, as we'll see, in Chutz Laretz, this is mostly not a problem, because ribis, and we'll come to this in just a moment, is only a problem between Jews. It's not a problem from Jew to non-Jew, from non-Jew to Jew. It's only a problem amongst Jews. Why that is, we'll see. Yeah.
But my earlier question is, I know we don't mean to have your lending you money interest free. That doesn't mean that loan can be from various channels. That person who's lending you the money may be in some form getting his loan.
Correct. So that complicates everything, right? There's all types of, this is not new, there's all types of complicated things. Like if you're borrowing, if he is lending you money, you know, and he has the money because he's paying interest, right? Because he has a, you know, whatever, he took out a, you know, he has a mortgage, he has this. Or whatever, right? If he's extending you from his line of credit, and therefore, right, what if he, can you, right, is it an iser ribis for you not to take anything yourself, but to say, you know, if you overpay, pay the interest to the non-Jew, but you're the conduit, right? All types of complicated, right, there's all types of complicated things. What?
If I have a line of credit, and he needs money, but he doesn't have access to it, I can say, look, draw down my line, and it's yours.
Well, right, exactly. So there's all types of complicated chapters, and I don't want to get into the intricacies today because each one of them could take us forever, right? I mean, you know, ribbis shilas jump at you in cases where it's obvious like this, where you see that there's ribbis and you have to figure out who's he really lending from, the Jew, the non-Jew, da da da. It comes up in, you know, I mean, you know, I saw a shila just today, which I don't agree with the conclusion, but fine, where someone claims that you violate ribbis if you have two kids and one of, you give a lollipop to one kid and then your younger son is crying. And you bribe your older son and said, if you give the lollipop to your younger brother, I'll give you two lollipops after Shabbos. It's a violation of ribbis to your son. You know, shilas come up everywhere. I don't believe that conclusion at all because I don't think it's a loan and whatever. Fine.
I thought when you talked about the banks before, I thought the banks are exempt because they're corporations.
We're going to come to that. We're going to hold the thought in corporate. Hold the thought.
I was wondering, is this ribbis what the bond market does? Like,
pay the, yeah, of course. Bonds are, but that's very
business. Like you pay $99, they give you $100.
That's interest. Bid you.
No, I mean the principal.
Yeah, that's interest. That's interest.
That's precisely interest.
Yeah, but yeah. Even that's interest. Even going from 98 to 100, that's everything's interest.
You also go above, like 102.
And that's interest too. That's all interest. That's all called what's in Lashon Gemara, agar notarlei. You're being paid because you got your money later. Right? That's it. Right? That's ribbis d'oraisa. Ribbis Sutsa, Doraisa. And again, we can go on forever just setting out the basics. What I want to do is try to ask the ethical question, right, from a Torah sources, right, not like, a, you know, up in the air. The ethical question of should, if you're going to lend a loan to somebody, right, should you go that extra step and lend it without interest? And is what's true for individuals true for corporations? We're going to come back to them in just a minute. Yeah.
I have a heretical question.
Okay.
Is it really true? I mean, in our world, like, we want the Torah to work with our world, but
and that's all going to be part of the discussion. You're going to see, okay, most of what's going to be here, starting at number, most of this, right? There was a diyun, and I can send it out after this year if you want, a few years ago, a back and forth, machloket in, and I'm freezing where it was, whatever, in one of the Israeli papers, between multiple people about how we should deal with the problems in Israel, because obviously you have to do something, right? The society won't run if there isn't interest. How exactly should we deal with it, right? And we're going to see some of those sources in just a minute. Okay, but this really requires a background, because Heter Iska falls on the very, very broad category of what we call a harama, right? Right, basically a loophole, right? Right, a halachic loophole. So how do we approach loopholes, right? Are loopholes great? Like, well, that's nice, right? There's a halacha, and we've technically solved the problem, and we haven't violated an issur, now all is good, right? Is that like how we look at loopholes? Like, as long as you're clever enough to come up with a loophole, then, right, shalom al Yisrael. Or do we say, no, like, loopholes are loopholes, right? But we would like you to not take advantage of loopholes. I'm not saying that you violated an issur, but, you know, there's a problem. So, I gave you here, and I'll say it outside, part of a piece by Mori Barabi or Moshe Lechemstein. He says, here's the perception you should have. Right? He says that there's two, right, just look at the beginning. The observance of mitzvot rests on two foundations. And the first is man's position is constantly subject to God's command, the situation that stems from his absolute obligation to the master of the world. Right? On the one hand, mitzvot are obligations. But the other hand, as you can see in the title here, is mitzvot are opportunities, right? There are two reasons we do mitzvot, right? One is because we have to. We relate to God as commander, and we are commanded. And the other one is we recognize that mitzvot have, presumably, some sort of fundamental value. So a harama, right, a loophole, which allows us to get around the letter of the law, allows us to fulfill our obligation as commanded, limahadrin, Right? God can't turn to us and say, you missed the spirit of the law and the level of obligation. Who cares? I'm commanded. I did what I was told. Everything I did was, I hired the best lawyers or the best rabbis or whatever, and we made sure this is all the Mahadran. It's all good. Harama is problematic from the vantage point of mitzvot as opportunity. If you think that in addition to the letter of the law, there's a spirit to the law, that the Torah is supposed to accomplish something, so then every time you do a harama, you sacrifice, right? Because you miss the spirit of the law. Now, the problem, the thesis he sets out is as follows. Under certain circumstances, as Eli notes, it's possible that the spirit of the law no longer applies. Right? Or where you're in a situation where the spirit of the law, right, doesn't really make sense. But the letter of the law makes, well, there's nothing you do about the letter of the law. So what Rav Moshe said, and Rav Aaron said it as well, is when you get to a situation where the theory of the mitzvah doesn't really make sense, right, and it's sort of accidental that it applies in this situation, then a harama is legitimate, because the opportunity aspect of the mitzvah isn't relevant. The obligation is, and a loophole solves the obligation. But in a moment when the opportunity part of the mitzvah applies, so harama is Torah ethically problematic. Right? As the Gemara in Menachot says by Rav Katina, that right, you're trying to avoid mitzvah, and that's a problem. Right? The Gemara's example there is someone who makes sure he never wears a four-cornered garment, so he's not chayv in tzitzis. So technically, he didn't violate any mitzvah, but he... right, he lacked the sensitivity that tzitzit is an opportunity. The problem that you then have to face, because that basic theory, I think, is compelling. Right? Mitzvot have two levels to them. Haramot can, at best, solve the technicalities, but they can't solve the spirit of the law. So then you have to ask the question, okay, well, what is the spirit of the law? Right? And that's where I think, as we'll see in a moment, the discussion comes up in these modern poskim of, okay, what is the reason for ribbis, and is the reason relevant in such a way that heter iska is not ethically, right, Torah ethically, the right thing to do? Forget about mutter, the right thing to do, or is it because the spirit has dissipated, perhaps because, as Eli said, maybe, right, it doesn't apply in a society where things, you know, where the world won't function without interest. Or, as we'll see, often who are you lending money to? In the case of bonds, to the government, to the public, to banks, right? Classically, who was benefiting from interest? The big guy against the little guy, right? Bonds, for example, are the little guy benefiting from the big guy, right? So maybe that flip of paradigms has made it that, right, that the laws of ribbis technically apply, but the spirit doesn't, right? This is what we're going to see, okay? So that's what I want. That's the discussion I want to have. So what is the reason for ribbis, right? What is the tam hamitzvah, if you will? So you look at number two. Torah says in Shmot, Perchavet, Im keset talved ami et ahani imach lo tie lo kinoshe lo tisimun alav neshach. When you lend money to my people, to the poor one with you, don't be an oppressive creditor, right? Don't charge him interest. So just in that pasuk, right, what would you say? What is the basic logic? Right, what motivates the mitzvah, or the prohibition rather, of ribbis? Right? What, we only get one hint, right? What's the hint from this pasuk? Et ha'ani imach. Right? If a poor person asks you for a loan, don't lend b'neshech. Which implies that the prohibition against ribbis is fundamentally a function of tzedakah. It's just like you're supposed to give money to poor people, so you don't always give them money. Sometimes you lend them money, and when you lend them money, give them a free loan. If you look in Vayikra Chav Hei, the same thing seems to apply. Ki yamuch achicha mata yado imach vechazak tabo ger v'tosha v'chaim ach. Sorry, in Vayikra Chav Hei, it's not what it sounds like. Right? Vayikra Chav Hei, on the other hand, there's no mention of ani. What am I saying? It starts off with it. Ki yamuch achicha, your brother becomes poor. Right? Umata yado imach vechazak tabo ger v'tosha v'chaim ach. Alti chmito neshach v'tarbit v'arecha v'areita. מאלוקך וחייך וחייך עמך. עקף בכל דין לא למנשך ובמר בית לא תדין אוכלך, אני השם אלוקיכם אשר עשיתי אתכם ארץ מצרים לתת לכם את ארץ כנען להיות לכם לאלוקים. So both in Shmot Chav Bet and Vayikra Chav Hey, the reason for the prohibition of ribbis seems to be some sort of function of the mitzvah tzedakah, right? That just like you're supposed to give poor people money, you're supposed to extend them free loans. This becomes extremely clear. Skip for a moment to number 5 in Yechezkel. In Yechezkel Perek Yudchet, Ani ve'evyon hona, he's decrying the sins of Bnei Israel. He said, the poor and the destitute, they oppressed. Gzelot gazal, they stole. Chavol el yashiv, they didn't return their collateral. Vel golim nasainav toiva asa. And then pasuk yud gimel, b'neshech natan v'tarbit lokach v'chai lo yiched kol adayvot ha'el asa mot yumat, blah 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 blah. Right? And they lent to these poor people with interest. Right? It's a crime against the poor. Right? It's staka. Look at Dvarim, and to, so much so that you look in 6, in the Chomar Anach, which is the Chidah's Perush on Navi, he writes as follows. He says, Efshar lomar, mashakadav Rabbeinu ha'arizatzal. And the Ari used to say, Kshayam megaleach ha'mechavein l'kayim lo tazeh lo takifu pad roshchem lo shadchit pak zikanecha. The Arizal felt that whenever you didn't violate an Isser, you should have kavana to be mekayim mitzvah. So every time he shaved, right, and he didn't shave the parts of his face that's usher to shave, he would have in mind that I'm mekayim the mitzvah of not, you know, shaving the wrong part of my face with a razor. Based on that, the Chidah says, v'zeshe katav v'neshech lo yitain v'tarbit lo yikach, de'achar shayim mekayim aseg ditztaka, v'chayose yitzif lomar de'ya mechavein v'neshech lo yitain v'tarbit lo yikach, alder shekatavnu v'shem arizatzal. He says, when you don't lend somebody beribis, you should have in mind that you're being mekayim the mitzvah of tzedaka. Because that's what ribbis is really about. It's about helping the poor. But look at 4. If you look at number 4, in Devarim Chav Gimel, you get another aspect to it, which is, lo tashich lo achicha neshech kezef neshech ochel neshech kol davar asher yishach. Don't lend to your brother anything with interest. Lanachri tashich, but you can or should or must lend to the non-Jew with interest. Ulachicha lo tashich, but not to your brother. So that God will bless you. So in Dvarim Chav Gimel, the focus isn't a poor person. Who is it? It's Jew versus non-Jew. Right? What is the svara behind, what's the logic behind ribbis in Dvarim Chav Gimel? What do we add? That it's not just about poor people. It's one of the ways that you show your closeness to fellow Jews. Right? As the Ramban outlines here, I don't know if I put it, I don't think I did. No, I did. If you look at 10, right? Skip for a moment to 10. Right? The Ramban says, Ubeir Bekan, Sharabira Nechri Mutar, right? It's permitted to lend to a Jew. But not to a non, right? It's not true of, you know, stealing, you can't steal from a non-Jew. Why? So why can you lend with interest? Right? Because we say gezel goy aser. Ala ribishu nase ledash shnehem. But he said interest. It's not stealing. You both agreed. Uvertzonam lo neser el mitzad ha'achva v'achesed. Why is it prohibited? Because of your brotherhood. Kemoshe tivava hafto yecha kamocha. You're supposed to love your brother. Kemoshe amar yisham lecha pen yed davar levavcha bliyal v'alkein amar lemani v'racha shem lokecha. Chi chesed v'rachem yasem achiv kasher yilonu b'lo ribit v'techashev lo litzdaka v'chein shmita chesed b'achem. The same thing is true of shmita. And the Ramban says, what is the svara of ribbis? Ribbis isn't about tzedakah only. It's about brotherhood. It's ribbis is fundamentally not unjust. It's perfectly just. It makes the world go round. Meaning there is the time value of money. Right? That's what drives interest, is there's a time value to money. If I don't have my money for 10 years, I lose out on potential capital. So I charge you interest, and that makes up for the capital I lost. Right? There's a time value of money. So when I lend someone with interest, that's not unjust. What?
Even without inflation.
Without inflation, without anything, right? Forget the fact you're losing money on inflation, yeah. Right? But there's a time value. You know, let's say there was no inflation. Still, the time value of money makes sense, right?
Where was the logical step where we have to all of a sudden say,
Right, so the Ramban says, what's the Svara? Because the whole notion of Rib is that you're supposed to go out of your way to treat Jews like brothers, right? And everyone else isn't your brother. You only have to be just, right? Or to give a non-Jewish analysis of it, right? Adam Smith has two books, right? He has Wealth of Nations, which is his famous book, right, about capitalism, in where he has his famous line that you don't expect to live based on the benevolence of the baker and the candlestick maker and all that, right? You expect to be treated fairly. Fairly means that the baker has the right to make money, and therefore you expect to pay him. That's Wealth of Nations, where he's describing how you deal with societies, right? People you don't know, like the market in general, the faceless, nameless market. In Theory of Moral Sentiments, he says there's another thing. In addition to justice, there's an obligation towards your inner circles of benevolence, what he calls beneficence. Right? You're supposed to go beyond the call of justice. And you're not supposed to be fair, you're supposed to be kind, you're supposed to be generous, you're supposed to give charity. Right? That's basically the theory of the Torah. Right? To non-Jews, you owe them justice. Right? You have to be fair, you have to be honest, but you don't have to go out of your way and deny the fact that you're losing the time value of money by lending without interest. To a Jew, you owe not just justice, not just fairness, you owe benevolence. You have to be nice, right? You're brothers, right? And just like you wouldn't lend with usury to your actual brother, right? If your brother needed money and you lent money to your brother, you wouldn't say, okay, let's draw up a document and like charge you, 17%, whatever, daily compounding interest, right? You would say, look, you need a loan, here's a loan. So you're supposed to treat all Jews like they're part of that inner circle. That's where the logic comes from for Ramban. Right? And therefore, what is the point of Ribbis? Right? The point of Ribbis is to underscore the fact that we are brothers. Now, there's all sorts of theological reasons that the Mepharshim give based on the Yetzias Mitzrayim components of this, right? That maybe it's a lack of bitachon if you lend with Ribbis and all types of things. But I just want to focus on those two. Right? What? Those two. That Ribbis is either tztaka, right? It's about staka and it's about helping the poor, or it's an obligation towards all Jews because of our inherent brotherhood. And it's not about poverty, it's not about anything. It's simply about the fact that lending beribis denies brotherhood, denies that you owe benevolence to your brother. Now, there's all types of, I can prove these, I can go through it. When you look in the Avnei Nezer, for example, in 12, right, he's... Yeah. Right, so what some of the Mepharshim note, right, I gave it to you here from the Sefer Zechornot L'Rishmuel Abuhav, is maybe all Ani means is Ani L'Oto Davar, meaning someone who needs something, right, and therefore it could mean an usher, because someone who's rich but needs a loan, so for the purpose, right, he's poor in the sense he doesn't have what he needs, right, so then you can just interpret away, right, so you can either say there's two levels, there's stucca plus brotherhood, or you could say no, it's a relative stucca thing, right, it's just everybody at some point needs something. It's not necessarily someone who's poor per se. Now, kia mucha chicha doesn't work so well with that, right? That's if your brother is destitute. But anyways, that's how Shmuel Abuhav takes it. Right, you can look at the top of the page here. Afilu hu asher gomer v'tzarach litel ani hayav ozer shah. Even if he's wealthy, if he needs money, so for these purposes he's poor. And therefore it's like gezel. Okay. Right, so that further complicates it, is what happens when you take interest but direct it to a third party, and for sure if you direct it to a tzedaka, right, that further complicates it, and like I said, all the intricacies of Ribbis, we don't have time to discuss here, right, we thought we would finish by August, presumably we're going to go straight into Elul, right, but you're right, that is even more complicated, because then you're taking it, but you're directing it to a tzedaka, and therefore the Ribbis helps the poor, and it's not directed at your brother directly, right, because it's directed at tzedaka, which is a corporate entity, right, all those things complicate this whole thing. Okay, I gave you in 14 a an example of a heter iska. You can look at it. Again, what it does is it restructures a loan as an investment. But for now, I ask you the ethical question. Okay. If Ramosha is right, that Ha'aramo, that it's legitimate ethically, Torah ethically, to circumvent the letter of the law if you're not violating the spirit of the law, right? So now, let's talk about realistic cases, right? You take out, let's take an example of a bond, right? Where the little guy is lending to the big guy, right? That's what you're doing. You're lending to the government, right? You're lending to a bank, right? You're lending to whatever, right? So, it's an electric company, sure, right? Spirit of the law. Is this staka, right? To not lend with interest? For sure not. Right? For sure not. You're lending money to the bank, right? Is it a violation of achicha, right? Is it a violation of that ethic that the bank is your brother and you're not showing brotherhood? Well, it depends. What does it depend on? This is what you mentioned before. What does it depend on? Does halacha recognize corporate entities? If halacha recognizes a corporate entity, so then lending money to a bank, there's no achicha, right? But if there's no such thing, then you're lending to, I don't know who exactly, but you're lending to somebody.
It's an invisible beneficiary.
Right, so possibly, right, so possibly not. Hold that thought, right? What about the other way? What if a bank lends to you, right? So, from the vantage point of staka, so, maybe, what does it depend on? It depends on what you're borrowing money for, potentially, right? If you're borrowing money for food, right, like in Israel, it's totally standard to go into the red. You're allowed to go into the red, right? Like, you know, that's just standard. People go into the red, and they pay in installments for food. You go into the grocery, you pay 20 shekel for, you know, a few loaves of bread and milk, and they ask you if you want to pay in 4 installments, right? Like, people do this, right? And then you pay interest, right? Again, okay, the store, fine, you know, whatever. You can talk about the corporation, Rami Levy or whatever, right? So if it's for food, is it a problem? Well, from staka, yes, but what about achicha? Again, it depends. If there's a corporate entity, so then the corporate entity is lending money to the individual and there's no achicha problem. If halacha doesn't recognize corporations, so then it's some guy, Rami Levy, is lending you money with interest and now there's a problem. But what happens if you're taking out money for a mortgage? So is a mortgage, are you poor? Right? You're buying a $10 million house. You're just, right? And you're putting, you know, you could buy a $1 million house and you could put the money down, right? But, you know, you're buying a $10 million house, so you're putting down $3 million and you're taking out a $7 million, right? You can only take out 30%. You have to put down at least 30% in Israel. You can't put down less. It's impossible. It's against all regulations. 30% is minimum. So you put down $3 million, right? You're not poor by any stretch of the imagination, right? And besides, it's an investment, right? Real estate keeps going up because there's not enough supply, right? So it's not really a stuck issue, right? And it's not an achicha issue, maybe, right? And this is really what everyone was dealing with, right? It's okay. What is the svara? What is the logic behind ribbis, and how would it apply in the modern market? Add to that what Ellie mentioned before, is all the poskim are looking not just for a technical heter, but for, right? They're looking to justify it ethically because they all have an intuition that if we forbid interest completely, then the market will collapse. Because we need it. We need it for mortgages. We need it so banks can exist, right? That is what runs a capitalist society, right? We're not living in an agricultural society where people taking out short, small-term loans till the end of the season to buy equipment, right? We're talking about huge loans and, you know, people who take out mortgages, you know, often come out on top with millions of dollars because their house shot up, right? We're talking about a society where everyone benefits. The little guy, the big guy, everyone benefits, right? The only people who don't are people who really have neshech in the classic sense of the word, right? Where it bites into you, right? Like, you know, payday loans or something, right? Payday loans where, you know, it's whatever, 500-600%, and, right, it, you know, this is, I don't know how much of a scandal is in Canada. In the States, this has been a scandal for a very long time. What?
Same thing.
Okay, so in the States, like, they keep trying to crack down on them, they keep coming up with clever things, and after, you know, like in Ohio, after they closed all the loopholes that they could possibly have. It took them a few years to close every loophole. The payday loans came up with the brilliant idea that the law, state law only applies, and even federal law only applies in state land. The exception to that is Indian reserves, and therefore they partnered, right? They incorporated with the local Indian reserve, and therefore they're not subject to the law, so you can't do anything. That's right. So all types of people are brilliant. Fine. So this became a huge machlokas. So what I gave you now, 16 through the end, and we won't read it all inside, but I gave you the relevant pieces, were several attempts at grappling with this question. So first, we'll see number 16. The Aseh Lecha Rav, the Rav Chaim David Halevi, chief rabbi of Tel Aviv, like 50, 70 years ago. Very prominent Svardi Posek. He takes the position that the Svara, the logic for Ribbis is Staka. Right, 16. Tam mitzvah Torah b'Israel ribis hu pashut v'nir maz b'shmo neshech chayadua. The reason for the mitzvah is obvious, and that, as it says in Neshech, hine shnei mikrim heim shebehem niskak adam levot kesef mechavero b'shat dochko. There are two reasons you'd lend money when you need it. Ish ani meikaro shekol chayav asirim heim chayim machzor v'oni ach li'itim niskakul l'schum kesef gadol yoter m'matzui b'esei gadol v'notza bilti regila yichasit. Right, someone who's poor, has always been poor, and sometimes needs really big loans, so you should lend him money. Lend him money without interest. Right, based on his horrible situation, he's going to play back slowly. Your whole life, he'll just be paying interest. Right, you take out a 90% right mortgage for his tiny little house. Right. At ridiculous rates, he's paying the interest for the first 20 years of the loan, right? He dies before he ever puts any money on the principal, right? Fine. Exactly. Exactly. 85 years, you'll only be paying the interest, and, you know, exactly. Right? Lefiani is daiti lo zevram zat Torah mitzvah ribit from farshat mishpatim im kesef tavei adami and aimach lo tiyelo kenoshe lo tizimon lo mneshech razon lo adem sheni yom yikaro. That's what he's talking about. And then he said, and then there are people who weren't always poor, but they fall in bad times and need a loan to prop them up. That person is also poor. Right? Different type of poor. So the next part, and he says, that's tiyamuch achicha. Right? That's tiyamuch. Right? If someone becomes destitute, so in that case, he says, you should lend without ribbis. But if you look, two lines from the bottom. What happens if someone comes and says, I need $1 million? Because he's a successful businessman. Right? He has a successful business. He brings in $500,000 a year. Right? And he has an opportunity to expand, to quintuple his bottom line. Right? He needs $1 million loan. He goes to the bank, right? Or he goes to his friend, right? And he says, look, I've been successful, but I have this opportunity to buy a new property and become even more successful. I'm going to go from being, you know, well off to being fabulously rich. I just need $1 million loan, but, right? That guy, he's not an uni. Right? Don't lend him the money, so he'll continue making $500,000 a year. Woo, right? Really, poor guy, right? Hare lo matzanu shum chiyuv batara lahavot l'adam zeh. You have no obligation to lend him $1 million. She'enu ani, v'avlo adam shemata yado. He's not poor. Elamai, ach kevan shasrat torah etzem haribit. But what can you do? Interest is forbidden. Hare shadam zeh ne'echol lahavot klal ki ha'ish lo yaskim. L'atet lo schumim gedolim she'yadazek behem l'rav chatehu. What's the guy going to say? Right, he's going to come to you for a loan. And what are you going to say to him? Why should I lose money for you? Why should I give you $1 million interest-free loan? Why should I lose the time value of money? Right? You don't need the money for food. You need it so you can make millions of dollars. I want to make a little bit of that. Right? So I'll lend you $1 million so you can make $10 million and you give me back $1 million, right? $1 million with $100,000 interest. At least I made something off of it. Right? He's not some miskin, right? Some poor guy. See, that's true. Besides, if I have $1 million to lend you, right, obviously I have $1 million, I could invest it somewhere else, right? The type of guy you go to borrow $1 million isn't the type of person who lets his money sit around in the bank. If I'm giving it to you, I want it to do something for me. I want it to make money, right? I'm doing you a chesed, right? I'm only going to make a 10% interest off you, but trust me, I've been successful. I can make 500% if I kept $1 million and invested it myself. It says, Mikan samach rayona pashut shaliska, shulamayse shutafut. al piyat the name of Rambam Halacha, he said that's a heteriska. Because what's a heteriska? Okay, I don't know what that was. But he said, what's a heteriska? A heteriska is where I restructure a loan as, okay, I have no idea what's going on with that light. I restructure a loan as a business venture. Well, Rav Chaim Davalevi says, well, look, in a case where the guy is using, a rich guy needs more money for a business venture, that's ethically, that's what you're doing, right? You're giving up your own investments for his. So technically there's ribis, but in terms of the ethics of the issue, there's no ribis problem. So Rav Chaim David Halevi therefore says, when somebody poor comes to you and asks money for basic necessities, don't take a heteriska. You might solve the problem of ribis, but you're missing the svara, right? Or as the Chafetz Chaim said, you're missing the mitzvah of lending to a poor person. When is a heteriska legitimate, right, in Ramosha's language, if the opportunity of the mitzvah doesn't exist, right? You don't need to help this guy, right? He's a millionaire, right? You're just a bigger millionaire, right? But he's not an ani. So now all that's left is the obligation, the fact that there's a technical list on the books called ribis. So that's when loopholes are great. Loopholes solve the technical problem when the ethical problem isn't there. But what is Chaim David Halevi assuming? That what's the logic behind the mitzvah?
Staka.
But it's not obvious. And I'll prove it to you. I'll prove it to you, not just from the Pasuk, but there's a proof from the Mishnah and the Gemara. The Mishnah, with the ensuing discussion, Daf Samachay, has the following discussion. If I lend you money, right, the malve, right, me, I lent you money, I can't live on your property for free because it's haramas ribis. Or maybe ribis d'oraisa if we made a disagreement. I can't live in your property, right, without paying for the property for free, right, as a kickback for the fact that I lent you money. But wait a second. What is the Mishnah implicitly telling you about ribis? That who's, right, if I'm living in your property and I'm lending you money, what does that imply? That fundamentally you might be better off than I am, especially in the ancient world, right? Landowners were wealthy, renters were poor. So the lender, right, is trying to live for free on somebody else's property that he lent money to. And the Mishnah says that's a paradigmatic case of ribis. But that sounds like the little guy, right, lending to the big guy, right? And the Torah says, yeah, no, don't take ribis, which tells you that there isn't, right? We do seriously lahalacha take, and that's only derabanan, but we add that on and we say we don't want you. There is that element of, as the Ramban says, achva, where it's not just about rich and poor, it's about, that's not what we do among brothers. I don't care who's rich, who's poor.
That's so, a strong proof, because it could be just talking about a technical case.
Of course, but why do you come up?
No, I'm saying it happened.
No, in Achana.
And in fact,
you're right. Maybe we could come up all types of cases, but
doesn't exist. But
in Achanami. But as the Ramban said, right? With the Ramban, it makes a lot of sense, right? Why does the Gemara have all these cases where, right? The question is, can the Loveh, can the Malveh benefit from the Loveh, right? From his real estate, because it doesn't only apply amongst, right, for poor people. It also applies for someone who's well enough, right, well off enough that he doesn't kick you off his land right away, right? I mean, imagine the case, right? The Gemara Mishnah is telling you there's somebody who his malvet moves into his property and he doesn't even bother kicking him off, and we only forbid it because of ribis, because you're getting a kickback, but the guy doesn't care, right? He can afford to let you live on a second property, right? It's clear that the Isser, now of course you could say that it's a technicality, you're right, right? But according to Ramban, maybe it's more than a technicality. Is that ribis also about achva? Okay, so this sort of tension is what erupted in this, you know, not just in this Chaim David Halevi, but this later machlokas between Rav Yaakov Ariel, Rav Yoel Ben Nun, and Rav Daniel Wolf, which I gave you in 17, 18, 19, until the end, right? So if you look at Rav Yaakov Ariel in 17, he said as follows: Kamur yisur l'talva ot beter iska lematarot zorchaniyot ki iska kishma keni. Him yuedit lasakim lashkaot ravachiyot by something. Was that Belvat? Oh yeah, of course. בלבד. משיכת יתר ברבית לדוגמה לשם ברון חובות, מחול לשם טיפול שיניים, או לטיול בעולם מבלי להיכנס כאן לעצם נושא הטיול בחוץ לארץ, פיין, אסורה. אמנם אם, קלאסיק, אמנם אם יש אדם תכנית חיסכון רווחי יותר, שהוא מודף לשמוע על יתרונותיו של הצדיקים, ומשיכת יתר זה נועדה להבטיח את רווחי העסקה שלו, חי צדי אחר, תהיו הפוסקים שימוש ביתר עסקה במקרה זה. He says, you know what the difference is? You, heter iska is technically mutter. He says, when should you use it? Depends what the guy's borrowing money for. If he's borrowing money for essentials, so then don't use a heter iska. You're violating the spirit of the law. If he's borrowing it for investment, so lend it, because then the spirit of the law doesn't apply. It's really an investment, and therefore heter iska restructures the loan as a business venture, because that's basically what it is. You're lending money to someone to be involved in business, right? So what does Rav Yaakov Ariel think, like Rav Chaim David HaLevi, right, with a twist though, right, is that fundamentally what is the prohibition of ribbis about? A form of tzedaka. Now, not just tzedaka, because we noted a rich person could also need tzedaka, right, if he has a need, but he distinguishes not between poor and rich, but between, right, needs, necessities, and investments. If someone's borrowing it as an investment, that's not lotal, right? That's not the spirit of the law of ribbis.
Or now, luxury.
What?
Or luxury.
Right, or luxuries, right? Luxury, etc.
I thought
with the heter iska, you become a partner. Right, it's more complicated, right? Technically, what happens is you become partners in a business venture, and you commit to the other guy that if, you know, that you will, if you can't prove, right, the, you know, by a certain amount, how much profit there was, right? So then you commit to assess the profit at X amount, which becomes the quote-unquote interest, right? Right, and then since you won't end up proving it, right, so then you'll always pay the interest. That's essentially what happens. Yes, that's the tech, at least one model of the many, many different ones. So therefore, Yaakov Ariel, taking a variation of the stock-up thing, says, when is it ethical to use a heter iska, not mutter, when is it ethical, right? When you're dealing with business loans, but not if you're dealing with necessity loans. But there's a caveat which I'm not at all convinced of, even within his own framework, is where would you put mortgage? I would put mortgage as investment, right? Because people don't actually need to own a house, right? And by owning a house, right, especially in a good real estate market, right, it's an investment. Even if it isn't, it's a form of an investment, right? People could rent forever, right? Rav Yaakov Ariel says a mortgage is a basic necessity, and therefore, if we're talking about the biggest problem in the interest market, it's mortgages. And he says, yeah, mortgages are unethical, right? And what's his solution? Look at the left side, kupot gmach, right? Big, really big gmachs, right? Really, really, really well-funded gmachs. Now, but what? Do they? For houses? Wow. That's impressive. For the whole mortgage or for down payments?
For down payments.
He's saying for the whole house, because you can't take, it's unethical to take the other, 70-80%. But the basic svara, we can argue about, his application, is that he's following, again, the notion that ribbis is a form of stucca protection, right, for necessities, and therefore for necessities, don't worry about it. Right? Sorry, don't do a heter iska. For non-necessities, for investments, so fine, a heter iska is ethical. Now you just have to solve the technical problem of ribbis. That's what a heter iska was created for. Rav Yoel ben Nun in 19, I'll say it outside because we're running short on time, says no. He takes the other model. He says, why is ribbis aser? What's Rav Yaakov Ariel saying? That the problem of ribbis is about...
Okay.
Staka, it's not about staka, it's about achicha. And therefore he says, you know what the solution is? Paskin, that a corporate entity is not a person. It's a corporation. Why? Because think about it. If the answer is achicha lo tashich, don't turn to your brother and treat him, right? Turn to your brother, treat him with brotherhood, and not treat him like an anonymous, faceless stranger, right? In the Wealth of Nations, Worlds of Adam Smith. Right, treat him like a brother who you wouldn't lend with interest. When you go to the bank, right, whether you're taking money from them or they're taking money from you in the form of a bond, Who is the bank? Right? There's no achva at all. Right? You're talking to some representative of a representative of a board of a CEO who in turn represents shareholders, right? He says the svara is achva. But whenever, so that means that if your friend comes to you and borrows money, whether it's for stucco purposes, right, because he's poor, or it's for an investment, still, you owe it to him as your his brother to give him an interest-free loan, if you can. But if it's a bank, you don't owe it to them, they don't owe it to you, right? It's a faceless, nameless, legal fiction. You can't have a brotherhood with a bank. And therefore he says, what's the solution? Right? The solution is exactly what we have, right? Is get a heter iska for the bank, or maybe not even a heter iska, right? He says, because if you really think that a bank is fully a corporation, you don't even need a heter iska. But for sure, if you have a heter iska, right? So, you don't have the technical problem, and you don't have the achva problem, and now it doesn't matter whether it's for tzedaka purposes, right? For dvarim chiyuniyim, or it's for investment purposes, because now there's no achva violation. Rav Yaakov Ariel turned around to him, and I don't even have to read it to you. I'll just look at 20, right? Just look at the title of his article, right? Habank achinu ata, right? Rav Yaakov Ariel said, why don't I like this? Because if you don't recognize the corporate entity of a bank, then you're violating the achva principle, because you are dealing with your brother. In order to say that you're not violating the achva aspect, you have to assume that halacha recognizes corporate entities. If it doesn't, so achinu ata, right? That's what he starts with. Bitui achicha shuskar b'tara b'yachli tzor ribit. Eino poter abankit me'achrayut musarit. He said, that's not true. What, you want banks to be unethical? This is like the worst stereotype, that banks don't have to care about people, right? That's what Rabbi Yochanan is saying. Banks, legamre, halacha, we don't have to care about people. You're a faceless corporation. Go ahead. B'simcha, treat people like objects. That's what you're allowed to do. Rav Yaakov Ariel said, what are you talking about? We would like our corporations to represent the humans inside of them. Right? Now, Rav Daniel Wolf, I gave you an 18, doesn't like this whole thing and suggests all types of different models, but he said, why does he come up with different models? Because, as he said, without lending interest, everything will, the monetary system will collapse. That's what justifies finding Heterim in the first place. So he comes up with Ribbis Derech Knas, which according to many Rishonim is totally mutter, and all types of things. But to summarize, right, and I gave it to you here so you can read the ins and outs of their arguments. The basic question I think should be asked when you start discussing the application of Ribbis isn't just what happens in most Yerim on Ribbis, which is, okay, if you're going to lend money, how do you write a good Heter Iska? Make sure you get an Iska, Heter Iska L'Mahadrin. No, there's the problem Ramosha mentions, which is, mitzvot aren't just obligations where you can check off that I got a good loophole. They're opportunities, which forces you to ask the question, what is the logic for Ribbis, and are you missing an opportunity by circumventing the law? That's question one. And question two, even more straightforwardly, as the Chafetz Chaim says, is in addition to the prohibition of Ribbis, there's a mitzvah asay of lending money to a poor person, which you clearly miss. Right? Forget obligation, opportunity. You missed a mitzvah daraisa, right? That is a opportunity cost, right? You're losing a mitzvah. The question should be recognizing the fact that under certain circumstances we really need to have interest, because our monetary system, a capitalist system, runs on interest. We need that. So we're going to have to rely on some sort of kula, right? We need a legal loophole. We have no choice, right? But when should we employ the legal loophole? And this is the machlokas the poskim are arguing about. Those poskim who see in ribbis fundamentally an expression of tzedaka say, well, heter iska makes sense if the little guy is lending to the big guy. Meaning, when you take out a bond, gesunta, hey, take out a heter iska because you're lending to the big guy. How could that be tzedaka? Right? The bank doesn't need your money. You need theirs. Right? So the fact that they're issuing you a bond, or the government's issuing a bond, right? They're not an ani. You're more of an ani than they are. So the spirit of the law is fine. So now all you need is a heter iska to solve the technical problem. Or, the way Rav Yaakov Ariel says, it depends what you're borrowing money for. If you're borrowing money for necessities, so then it's an ethical problem to lend with Ribbis. If you're lending for investments, so now you all got to do is solve the technical problem. That's all you conceptualize ribbis as a tzedakah problem or tzedakah issue. If you conceptualize ribbis as an achicha issue, right, not about poor and rich, but about how do you relate to other Jews, so now, as Riel Benun says, the question isn't necessarily are you dealing with rich people or poor people or necessities or luxuries. The question is who's lending to who, right? Is it two people who have to face each other face to face as brothers and charge each other ribbis, right? Or is it a corporation? And Riel Benun's solution is to say no. Let's rely on the achicha principle and say that ribbis is only a problem when there's an individual who you're treating as not your brother, but a corporation where it's already nameless, it's already faceless, right? So then, either you don't even need a heter iska if we really think corporations are corporate entities, or even if you think that technically they're not, ethically they are, right? Now, Riakarel pushes back because he says, no, maybe banks also have to deal with brotherhood, right? But again, you can read the ins and outs of the argument, but I think that if you really want to have a discussion of how is ribbis relevant in the modern world, and recognizing, as Ellie pointed out, that we need to allow interest in some way, shape, or form, because our economy will collapse without it, the discussion you really need to be having is not what's the best way to write a heter iska mahadrin, is what were the laws of ribbis trying to accomplish, and therefore under what circumstances should we take advantage of the loopholes, and what circumstances should we say if we take advantage of the loopholes we miss the point? And that's, I think, the ethical discussion you need to have to get the spirit of Torah law and not just a letter. So that's my food for thought on what we should be thinking about in ribbis. In the afterwards, what I'll do is I'll send out the full file with Riel Benun's article and Yaakov Riel's back and forth. It's many, many pages. Well, it's not actually 6 pages, but in tiny little columns, right, in tiny little font. And in Rav Dani Wolfson, you can see how really this ethical question is what animates their machloka. It's not about the best way to write a heter iska, but what circumstances legitimate the use of a legal loophole without missing the spirit of the law. Okay.
Shkoyah. Good question.